Welcome to Tips from the Server Room. This podcast is designed for all you systems admins, network specialists, or the guys and gals out there in the office who handles it all. Sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy Tips from the Server Room. Hey, welcome back, my friends, once again to Tips from the Server Room. This is episode number 87 for May the 5th, 2015. I'm your host, Jack, and once again, I'm going to help bring you to that wonderful world of technology, all that magical connectivity of fiber optics, Cat 6, Cat 5, Windows servers, maybe some Linux every now and then. Who knows if we ever get there. And we're talking about DNS, DHCP, and all those other wonderful services that run on top of your server that we know and love to use each and every day. Friends, this show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Check out all the great tech podcasts at techpodcast.com. We're also syndicated across stitcher.com. That's STITCHER.com, where you can pick up this podcast and many others of many genres. You can download the app today on your smartphone and be listening in just a few minutes, as long as your internet connection holds up, and you can install that onto your smartphone. It's for either iOS or Android phones. So pick up Stitcher.com. Folks, please check out my website if you have a minute, and I hope you do. It's tipsfromtheserverroom.com, where you can comment on these shows and say, "Hi, Jack, you know, I was just thinking about this or that." You can also leave me a voice message. Send your questions in. Let me get those questions from you to answer, maybe to help you through something that you're not quite familiar with. You can send those questions and call me at 724-701-0550. Once again, at 724-701-0550. If you have any questions, or maybe you don't want to do the voice message, or future ideas for future shows, you can email me at jackstechcorner@gmail.com. And you can always follow along about these shows and posts and everything else I might throw up there on my Twitter account. And please follow me at Technoman. That's TECHNOMAN. Well, folks, are you tired of hearing it? I know I am. What am I tired of hearing? Oh, it's soon to be end of life for Windows Server 2003. Wow. End of life for Windows Server 2003. Get out of town. Really? I set up what's called a Google Alert. Now, if you've never used Google Alerts before and you use Gmail, obviously you probably have a Gmail account out there, then take those Gmail accounts and you want to set this up so that you can receive alerts. So I put in there Microsoft, I put in servers, I put in Windows Server, and it seems like I just get bombarded every day with, "Hey, it's end of life for Windows Server 2003. No, really? Are you sure it's the end of life for Windows Server 2003? I mean, I did a show on this how many shows ago, such a long time ago, when we had the interview with the Microsoft executive, and we talked about the Server 2003 dying out, so we all know it. And if you're not doing something about it now, you're not going to do anything about it anyway. So please, Microsoft, quit telling us it's the end of life of 2003 Server. We know that's happening. Did anybody get the latest, greatest news this week about Server? I think they're calling it Server 2016. Now, you know what? We can't change our servers as rapidly as we change our workstations. Some of you, and I know some of you out there, are still running Windows XP on your workstations. I know you are. And I don't know who you are, but I know some of you are. So you probably still are running Windows Server 2003. Maybe you upgraded to 2008. I don't know. But anyway, regardless of it, if you upgraded or not, do we really need a new server version every year or every other year? I don't think so. And one of my texts came to me today and said, "Jack, why would they do that?" The only reason I can think they're doing that, to be honest with you, Very simply put, they're doing that because, one, I guess it's money. He said, won't it be a free upgrade? And I said, nah, probably not with Windows Server. That's probably not going to happen to be a free upgrade. But the reason they're doing that is as they're building these new desktop client softwares, they want to make sure we have the latest, greatest GPOs to control those, right? You have to have the proper settings in the group policies to be able to adjust and set those permissions or whatever you want to do. Maybe it's with the desktop, maybe the toolbar. You know, we even have stuff in there for Internet Destroyer or Internet Explorer. And we also have settings in there now probably for this new browser coming out. So that's why they keep upgrading it. Why don't they just make an upgrade to the current server model, you know, Windows Server, 2013? I don't know. I don't know why they're not doing this and why they have to keep pushing us so far forward. But anyway, that's going to be out. That's going to be in, you know, like in a beta version, I'm sure, or an early release version for a long time. So you have plenty of time to test it out and plenty of time to learn it. And I'm sure I've been getting a lot of emails that said, Jack, if a new server version comes out, are you going to create a new online course for it? And I'm sure I will absolutely create a course for it. So that would be available so you can learn it more rapidly probably than playing with it. Okay, with that out of the way, about 6 minutes of babble into our podcast tonight, we're going to talk tonight about something that we've been getting hit with. It's the end of year for us in education. And we've been getting hit with a lot of stuff now for next year, like new stuff that we're bringing into the schools for next year. You may be thinking about upgrading your Office package to the latest, greatest, newest Office package coming out from Microsoft. Whatever. This even works for some of the updates that we've been playing with, and we've been able to push out some updates. So what I'm talking about tonight is basically installing software. What's the difference between a server-based software and a local software? And there's a couple ways to look at this. The first way, we're going to talk tonight a little bit about pushing applications out, or it's also referred to as publishing an application to a user or to a particular computer. You can do it two different ways, but we'll get there in a minute. But there's also, and I didn't write this in my show notes for tonight, but there's also applications that you can run on a server. That's why we can run an application server, right? Not just for SQL, not just for the backend database, but we can also run our applications on the server. And when the user double clicks on a shortcut, they're actually executing it across your network and executing that on the server. And there's a few different ways you can do it. That's one where you put the shortcut on their desktop and you put the path to the shared file folder on the server. They can execute that. The other way they can use, and we've talked about this in the past, is remote desktop. Remote desktop is a great, great way of doing this. Now, you do have to buy the remote desktop client licenses for each person accessing that server. But in the end, you're going to save in your technician's time because you can set up, we set up just a couple different desktops, and we have users log on to a different remote desktop server to get into their applications based on who they are, what department they're in, and whatnot. That's a great way to do things because then you only have to set up that desktop once and it's good to go for everybody. Now, there are some things that you're going to have to worry about when you do that. But first, let's talk about local software. Local software is what you have on, such as your home computer, right? You buy a software package, maybe it's Photoshop, maybe it's maybe you download LibreOffice. That's a local software package. You're going to install it on your computer. You use it alone. You have a single license for that software. Here's where companies get in trouble. They want to go out and they want to buy a local software copy of some software, some commercialized software that's out there, but not really for the commercial business in the sense that you're buying a single license. And they'll take that software and they'll load it on 20 or 30 computers within their network. That's a no-no. You can't do that. Well, I mean, you can. Physically, it will work. But you are not following the licensing agreement. Most licensing agreements says, look, you can install this on one computer and one computer only. Now, if you want to install it on multiple computers, you have to buy multiple licensing. That's the way it should work to be upfront with these software companies. You know, and I have to say, I don't know what your business is. Let's say you're in fabricating. Let's say you might be into the automotive industry and you're building cars. You know, you can't give, or you can't sell one car to one person and then give that same model of car to five of their friends, right? You'll be out of business in no time. So what I'm saying here, software companies do employ people. They do pay these people a salary or a wage to write the software. And if you're not paying per copy, then, you know, those people can get laid off and out of work. I mean, we don't want that to happen. I know it looks very appealing to you to save money for your company, but if you're saving money for your company and then one day you come, you know, somebody comes in to run a software audit on you and find out that you're not doing your job properly, well, what happens is you're the one that gets arrested, put in jail, you have a record, and you may never be allowed to touch a computer again. So these are things to think about. Your company will just hire another tech person and they'll just take over your job and everything will be hunky-dory. So make sure you buy multiple copies of the software. So we always look for what's called, you can either buy your software based on the number of users, the number of computers, or you can buy what's called a campus license. That's what we buy in school districts. The campus license allows us to install it across multiple computer systems. Any new computer we buy, as long as it's on our campus, we can install that software under that licensing code. So that's something to think about. Let's talk about saving money on licensing costs. Now, we talked about one way you could possibly save money, right? You could just buy one copy and install it anywhere you want. Very illegal. The proper way to save money on licensing costs is look at some of the open source software packages out there. Just as if you can't afford Microsoft Server to run on your servers, you may want to learn and find out how you would do all this with a Linux-based solution, a very open source-based solution. You can still set up file shares. You can still set up logins and have permissions. And you know, you can do a lot of that same type of work using a Linux-based system that you would use with a Windows Server-based solution. So that's just something to think about saving money. The other way we save money is now is in education. Most educational facilities are using Google Apps. Google Apps and Google provides as many email addresses as we wish to have. I mean, they really never put a limit on it. And we can push these out to our users. So each user has the whole suite of Google Docs. Now they have such things as Google Classroom. If you're not using that in your educational facility, you may want to do that. You know, and there's just great things like group calendars for a business is amazing. You can set up as many different calendars as you want, and you can share that calendar amongst a group of people. Let's say if you're in an engineering firm and you have a big project, you can call it Engineering Project One. Put all the scheduling dates in there and share it with your engineering department. Then everybody will be on task with what you're trying to do. So it's just a win-win situation. You really can't go wrong, you know, with using Google Apps. But there's other stuff also. There's also Microsoft 365. I don't know how they charge for the model of Microsoft 365 for business, but I can tell you for education, they're starting to find a great way of doing it for free for education. Not so much that I know of for the college level, but for the public sector of schools, they are very much doing a free group of Office 365. And again, you have that same flexibility of web-based, you know, Office applications, web-based calendars, and all that. So it's just another nice way to think about going. So you can save money. Maybe you want to use, I mentioned earlier about LibreOffice. I really love LibreOffice. Matter of fact, that's the only Office package I have on my home computer. I use it all the time, and it works extremely well. So I don't believe in paying money for Office. I don't, you know, unless you have a group of people that is so inclined that Microsoft Office is all they know, then you may want to make sure you have that Office package for those folks. Now, where's a good place to store your software? Now, I wrote this in the show notes because I wanted to tell you how we store our software. Even if you buy software on a DVD or a CD or however you receive your software, maybe anymore on a thumb drive, take that software immediately, set up a file share that your technicians and your administrators have access to, and make a folder, like say Office 2013. Put all the Office install files in that shared file folder. You might want to have LibreOffice in there. Maybe you have a CAD program, put that in there. So what I'm saying is when you go out or when you send your technicians out to install software, you don't have to fumble around, go back, look for a DVD in the case, or try to find that thumb drive that you stuck somewhere. We're not sure where it is. Hopefully nobody formatted the thumb drive. And you can take that application and simply install it from your shared file folder on your server. This is a wonderful way to store your software. So the next question would be, what can you do with the key so you don't lose the key number? Well, this again is a very simple solution. On your server, in the Office 2013 folder, go in there and make a simple text document and put your key in there. Type your key number out in that text document. And everybody will know if I'm installing Office 2013 out of this folder, that's going to be the key. So just name it key.txt or whatever. So all your technicians know that that is the key for that application so you can install it. You can do it with all your applications. Now, can we do a package install? If you remember the beginning of the show, I talked a little bit about installing packages to the user or to the computer. And if you've played with GPO, I'm sure, you know, the group policies, I'm sure if you played with the group policies, you will understand that you can put a package together and you can install that package across your network simply by assigning it to a user or to a computer. Now, here is some of the things that we ran into, I guess. We normally install it based on the computer. So the first user who logs on that computer will have access to the shared file folder. But what happens is, as soon as that user logs in, that computer knows, or the GPO knows, it's supposed to push this application out if it's not there. If it's there, it's not going to try to install it again. If it's not there, it's going to install it for the first time. If you install this software based on the user, what happens is, every time that user logs into another computer, that software is going to want to reinstall. Again, it's going to see if it is installed, and it's not going to if it's there. But it's just a lot less network chatter if you install the software per computer. So one time the computer sees it, it installs it, it's finished. It doesn't matter what users log into that computer. Another thing you can have, what happens is if you log it by user, is if that user logs onto another computer, maybe that you didn't want that Office package on or that CAD program on, what's going to happen is that user's profiles is going to see that GPO, and it's going to install that application onto that computer even though you didn't want to. Say if Benny's at Sally's computer, but Sally doesn't use Office because Sally is a 3D graphics designer, well, it's going to install that package on there anyway. What happens then is you're using one of your licensing codes to install that on there. You're using one of your licensing sets to install that software on there. You didn't want it there. And when the user logs off, it doesn't uninstall the software. It will still simply be there. So it's very easy to do that. So remember, we can push software out again to either the user or the computer itself. I got to try to bring up this web page. Let me see if I could just do this here. Maybe I could do this here. And hopefully I'll bring this web page up. Well, no, I'm not doing it that way here. Let me bring this web page up here. Because now we're going to walk through a little bit about how to install software using a group policy. And I don't know why I just didn't do that right. Let's do this again. Let's see if I can get this up here. So I'm trying to bring up a web page, actually. So I'll just kind of babble on here as I'm doing this. There we go. And we're going to talk a little bit about how to do this through group policy. Now, get rid of this box. I don't know why they always get these boxes on here. And I'll make this a little bigger so I can read it to you. Now, assigning software, you can assign a program distribution to users or computers. We talked about that. If you assign the program to a user, it is installed when the user logs onto the computer. When the user first runs the program, the installation is completed. If you assign the program to a computer, it is installed when the computer starts. Okay, so go back. I said it would be when the first user logs in. That's not true. So when the computer starts, it will install the software. Then it will be available to all users who log onto the computer. When a user first runs the program, the installation is complete. So I was kind of half right there. Publishing software. You can publish a program distribution to users. When the user logs onto the computer, The published program is displayed in the Add and Remove Programs dialog box, and it can be installed from there. So I guess it's not as automatic as I kind of made that out to be. So your users have to know when they log in, go to Add and Remove Programs, and they'll see it. And they can click on like Office or whatever, Add, and it will come down from the server and install. Now, to create a distribution point, to publish or assign a computer program, you must create a distribution point on the publishing server. To do this, it says follow these easy steps. And I think what I'll do is I'm going to put the link to this this help file from Microsoft Support in the show notes tonight. So if you go to tipsfromtheserverroom.com, you'll be able to go through, and there's some links that take you step by step on how to do this. Because somebody once emailed me and said, Jack, you know, when you do a step by step talking, you can't follow it anyway. And I agree with that. And I'm very sorry for past podcasts for trying to do that. Now, to create a group policy object, or GPO to use to distribute the software package, follow these steps. And there's steps in there to follow those. Now, to assign a program to a computer that are running Windows Server 2008 or 2013, or to users who are logged on to one of those workstations, then you follow these steps. And again, I'm not going to go through all these different steps. The next step we will do is publish a package. To assign a program to computers that are running Windows Server 2008 or 2013, or to users who are logging on to one of the workstations, then you would follow the next steps. Publishing a package. To publish a package to computer users, to make it available for installation through the Add and Remove Program list in the control panel, you would follow the next steps. Redeploy a package. In some cases, you might want to redeploy a package. For example, if there's an upgrade or a change in the package, to redeploy a package, you will check out the next solution. You can also remove a published package. So if there's a reason you have to do an uninstall with the software, you can simply remove the package simply by following a set of really easy to go instructions. Again, I'm not going to read these all to you. This will be in the show notes. Published packages are displayed on a client computer after you used a group policy to remove them. So remember again, published packages are still displayed on the client computer after you use group policy to remove those. This solution can occur when a user has installed the program but has not used it. When the user first starts the published program, the installation is finished, then group policy will remove the program from their computer. So again, this is just some very simple steps, and I can tell you some things that we ran into. The first thing we ran into is when you set up that group distribution center, all that is a shared file folder on your server. The first thing we ran into when we tried this some years ago was, very simply put, if the user doesn't have at least read, and I believe it's change permissions on that folder, it will not install properly. You don't have to give them write permission, you know, and definitely don't give them delete permission. You don't want anybody to go in there and delete all your install files. But they want read and change, and it seems to work very well. Then the package will push down to them, and it will install just fine. You also need a shared file folder for any type of prerequisites or keys you're going to put in. And you can learn about keys just by, you know, using the administrative install tools that you will find on Microsoft's website. What these allow you to do is do things like pre-populate the key number because you don't want to have to worry about them looking at your key number, maybe taking it home and installing Office at home. So you want that to be pre-populated. You may want to pre-populate some settings. You can do different installs. You can do a what's called a silent install. That way, when it's the computer starts up, it's installing kind of in the background, they call it, without the users seeing anything or having to click anything. Or you can do a full-on install, and that's simply the way of installing the software and allowing the users to click next, and do all that stuff. Now, it has been in the past, and we've done this recently, it has been in the past that you had to have an MSI install file, Microsoft installation file. They have recently changed that, and we have been using it for EXE install files. That's where I told you you can do things like Flash, you can do things like Java, and there's great ways now where you can push those programs out to give you a little less headache about worrying about that stuff to install those on the computers in your network. So that's just some very simple ways of doing it with GPO. GPO is just so powerful, and just there's so much you can do with it on the network and on the computers. Now let me back up for a minute. If you remember a little while ago, I told you, you know, if you can't afford a Windows Server, you can use a Linux-based solution. Now, I'm not sure, but I'm positive there is, but I'm not sure in a Linux-based solution what you would use to push software out to your clients. And I'm not suggesting use Linux on your desktops. Use Windows on your desktops, but maybe use Linux Server as your backend if you can't afford Microsoft Server, because there's a lot of great solutions out there with the Linux kernel built around it that allows you to do stuff like authenticated logins, allows you to do something like shared file folders. You can always map the U drives using the network mapping tool. When you map a network drive on the workstation itself. So there's just a lot of ways around doing things, and you have to be open to solutions. One thing about our business, and I tell a lot of people, and my wife will tell people about this about me personally, is I don't always go for the in-your-face solution. Like, let's buy the latest, greatest everything, and it's going to work perfectly, because that's not always the truth. The truth is I look for the solution that's going to best fit a corporation or a certain network. Even when I do consulting work, I sit down, I design networks for people, I design their server backends for them, and we try to come up with a solution that's going to work both physically for their network, as well as you have to look at the cost, the financial part of their network. Many businesses starting out can't afford, a Windows, 2013 server or 2012 server. I'm sorry, 2013. I keep saying 2013 tonight. 2012 server. Maybe they can't afford that. And we had somebody call in one time and said that their client couldn't afford 2012, so they rolled out 2008. Maybe they can't afford either one of those server packages. So you might want to put them into a Linux solution as long as you can manage it. And don't be one of these companies. And I've had so many consultants out there even come to our businesses and say, look, Jack, you want to use Linux. You want to use a Linux desktop because it's free. It's very economical. That may be the case if you know it really well. But if you don't know it really well and you got to train your technicians, you got to send people back to school, you got to educate all your folks there of how to do things, then it's not beneficial for your company. It's going to cost you more in the long run. Because if something breaks, how do you fix it? But these consultants have it in their head with, well, you just call us back. Sure, we'll call you back at $200 an hour. No, we can't do that. For $200 an hour, I could probably hire, $200 an hour, I could hire 8 technicians and pay them $25 an hour. And they're happy with that wage. So this is the kind of stuff that we have to think about in the long run as network administrators. So, I know a lot of this tonight seemed like it was babbling, but I hope it brings some light to you a little bit about software packages, how to install that software onto your workstations. And it's funny because my wife has heard me say so much about our network. We were installing printers today on laptops, and we were doing it one at a time. So you talk 30 laptops with 2 people, taking you give or take a couple hours maybe to get them all done and ready to go. And I was talking to her on the phone. She said, well, why don't you just ghost them? Because she's heard so much about imaging and ghosting from me that she knows that I could just image those. My wife is very smart with technology, and she picks up on so much. It's just amazing when you're sitting at the dinner table talking to your spouse. And she's not even in the technology field, but she knows from my past talking to her about ghost. And so we talked about that at work, but maybe that's not the solution, because then you got to put them all back on the network, put them back on your domain, re-authenticate them, and all that. So it takes a lot more effort than to just put them on there. So, but remember, a few months ago I did a whole show on print servers. So that is our next project at work. We are putting together a print server. So then what we got to do is authenticate the user against Active Directory and say, students Bob, Joe, Fred, Bill, and Teddy can all use this printer, And then they'll simply see it. They'll be able to access it. And all we have to do is install it once on our print server. A lot better solution than what we did today. So I'm just telling you that because there's a lot of solutions and a lot of ways of doing things out there. So, you know, always keep your mind open to new things. Remember to look for this this write-up here. This is going to be in our show notes tonight under show number 88. There'll be a link to that help file from Microsoft support, and you can go and read that for yourself if you want to bone up a little bit on that. Folks, I want to thank you so much for using my Amazon link. I know many of you out there are doing that, and it's a great reward for the show. It really helps me out a lot to pay for my web hosting fees, to put these shows up, you know, because the more people download the shows, it's wonderful. You're like, okay, 2,000 people are downloading the show, 2,500 people are downloading the show. It's wonderful to see the numbers, but when you're paying for hosting fees, they want to bump it up because they want you to pay more for their bandwidth because people are downloading it from my my web server, right? Not mine personally, but the one I pay for. So that's where this funding goes. It also goes for equipment you need, like you know, digital recorders, microphones, mixers, and what have you, all the stuff that we have to pay for podcasting. I'm sure you know. And I do appreciate all the effort you use to use my Amazon link. Please use the Amazon link. If you're not, go to tipsfromtheserverroom.com, deactivate your ad blocker that I know you have on, and you'll see the link there for Amazon. Bookmark that, put that in your bookmarks, and whenever you buy anything from Amazon, if it's a toothpaste, a toothbrush, razor blades, you know, maybe that new Chromebook you've been looking at, maybe the new desktop computer, maybe the new, I don't know, 60-inch TV, whatever. Whatever you're going to buy, use that Amazon link. It doesn't cost you anything more, and it brings back a little bit of a few cents each time to the show, and I really, really appreciate your efforts. Thank you so much. Now, folks, if you want to learn Windows Server 2012, not 2013 as I sit through the show, and I'm not going to edit that out, so you probably heard that many times through the show, Windows Server 2008 R2, Windows Server 2012 R2 or ESXi 5.5 server from install to administration, you want to sign up for one of my courses. My courses can be found at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Look at the online class link at the top of the page. Click on that, and you can go and you can sign up for one of these courses. And I can tell you straight out, they're very inexpensive, folks. They're $250. And somebody said once, why do I charge such a low price? They must not be that good at courses. But folks, I get a lot of positive emails back from folks telling me that they've gotten jobs with the certificate I mail them. You know, it's nice to add on to their wall, maybe in their office, to say, look, I've had recent server training. Once you sign up for these courses, you're going to be in this course for life. I don't, you know, say finish the course in 6 weeks and I'll see ya. No, I don't do that. I want you to be a member of our learning family for life. So once you sign up for the course, you will be on there. You can refer to it whenever you want, and a lot of the folks do come back. Maybe they're setting up DNS or DHCP and don't remember something. They come back to their course, and they watch the video again. So you watch a video, and you take a short quiz. Very, very simple. Very simple quiz. I haven't had anybody ever fail my course, so that's a good thing. So I must be able to explain things well enough, and they answer the questions, and you're good to go. Again, once you complete the course, I will mail your certificate in the mail. And you can find those courses at tipsfromtheserverroom.com or even at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Every time I post a show, I post a link for those courses. So just go through the shows, click on the link, and you'll go right to the courses, and you can sign up for one of those today. As soon as you sign up, you will be good to go, and you will be starting that course right now. Right. As soon as you sign up right now, you're starting the course. Folks, again, thank you so much. You know, I get more of this from seeing the people that do download the show. You know, it's up around 2,500 downloads per episode, and I get a lot from that. I really appreciate it. When I started the show, I thought, hey, if 10 people listen each week, I'm doing a good thing. So now we're hitting a lot of you out there. I appreciate you listening. Spread the word about tipsfromtheserverroom.com, and I'll see you back here next Tuesday. Until then, folks, keep those servers humming along. Get your software together. Get your licensing together. Maybe even start some spreadsheets or some way of accessing it to see how many licenses you have. And we'll talk about that another time, I'm sure. So until next week, folks, take care. Hope you have a great work week. And I'll talk to you next Tuesday night. So long for now.
You just listened to Tips from the Server Room with your host, Jack. If you have any questions, please drop me a comment at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Thanks again for tuning in and downloading the shows. Now sit back, relax, and listen to the remainder of the music. We'll see you next week on Tips from the Server Room. So long.